Well, that was an interesting Olympics game. So as we both calmed down after the hectic finish to the US-Serbia game, I am joined by Raphael Johnson. We're going to go through the mock draft we did a couple of weeks ago now. It's been a while, but still plenty to talk about. Let's go balls deep. I'm the type to get shit done. You the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Got something loud in the blunt, yeah. Don't say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny and tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy. Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. I'm your host, Adam King at AdamKing91 on Twitter. Joining me, another mock draft recap, is Raphael Johnson. Raph, good game. US got there in the end. It didn't look good for a while, but Steph Curry put on a bit of a masterclass. LeBron did his thing. Welcome back to the show. It's been a little while. And what did you think of the Olympics game?
Yeah, it was a bit nerve-wracking for three-plus quarters. So, you know, it was good to see them finally buckle down a bit defensively. Thought they're a little better offensively where they attack mismatches in the fourth quarter. So, you know, you outscore a team of that caliber 32-15 in the fourth. You know, that says a lot for what they are able to finally do. But, you know, all credit to Serbia. Bogdan Bogdanovic, Nikola Jokic, we know what those guys are capable of, but especially Bogdanovic, took it to another level in this game today. So, yeah, now you get to take on the host for a gold medal. Yeah. That should be a high-tension environment on Saturday.
Yeah, so I didn't get up for that game because it started at about 1 a.m. our time. So that was a bit too hard for me. But I obviously saw that France got up. I was surprised. I thought Germany would get through to the gold medal game. So I didn't see a lot of the French game. Did you catch that one?
Yeah. I did watch it. It started at 8:30 my time. So obviously prime time to wake up. So Germany got off to a good start. You know, they were up 10 early. It felt like it was going to be like that group play game where Germany blew France out. But the lineup changes that they've made, you know, Gerson Yabusele, the dancing bear, he's come up huge for them. For France, Victor Wembanyama, he didn't shoot it well, but I think he did a bit of everything in terms of his all-around game. So guys like Yabusele, Evan Fournier, Isaiah Cordinier, you know, people in the States remember him from his failed time with the Atlanta Hawks, but he's been a very good EuroLeague player, very good player for France. But those two lineup changes have been huge for them. Don't know what's going on with Rudy Gobert's finger. He said it was operated on, but his coach said it wasn't. He didn't play because of lineup issues in the quarterfinals. Played a bit more today in the semifinal. It'll be interesting to see what his role is in that lineup against the Americans. I know it just feels like a case where Gobert, the matchups haven't worked well for him. So they've gone smaller, and it's gotten them to this point where they're guaranteed a medal at minimum. So, yeah, France has looked better than they did during the group stage. So you give them credit for that for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, US will be the favourites, undoubtedly, heading into that gold medal game. Do we see any way that France can upset them? I thought Germany had a chance. I'm not sure France do, but like I said, I didn't think they'd make the gold medal game. So playing, they're obviously going to have the crowd on their side. The narrative of Wemby sort of carrying his country to the gold medal game against the US is, I mean, you couldn't script it better. So do you see any way that France could beat them, or do you think the US will just have too much firepower?
I think they have a chance. Like I mentioned earlier, the lineup changes are probably the biggest thing. I don't think they're going to play Gobert and Wembanyama together as they did early in the tournament, just because they found better mixes here with Yabusele. Matias Lasord is giving them good minutes off the bench as another front court option. Those guys are smaller than Gobert, but they're also quicker. And I think they may be a better matchup for the Americans than Gobert. I'm sure we'll see him out there. Just don't know how much. I certainly give them a chance, especially in that environment. Lord knows what could happen if you have like men's soccer and men's basketball for France, both winning gold medals, which is a distinct possibility here. So I think that that crowd's going to be charged up. It's nothing that the Americans haven't seen before.
No.
But, you know, who knows? You certainly give them a chance. Like, odds makers had Serbia like a 16.5-point underdog. Mm. It didn't look like it. So I certainly give France a chance. But like you said, the Americans are going to be the favorite on Saturday.
Yeah, they will. And I just hope it's a good game. Close game would be nice. But yeah, we'll see in a couple of days. So moving into the mock draft, which we did, as I said, it was a couple of weeks ago now that we did this, so probably due for another one soon. You had pick 7, so sort of right in the middle there. I've done recaps with DMAC, Noah, Michael Waterloo and Dan Titus, who had the first 4 picks. So interesting to get sort of, obviously it's very different. You pick on the turn, you pick in the middle. Do you have a preference in a head-to-head sort of redraft kind of format here? Do you prefer to pick on the turn, or do you like to have basically a round of picks between your picks?
I prefer either turn, to be honest with you. I feel like you can get I feel like you're kind of stuck when you're in the middle in terms of what you can get for value. But somebody's got to do it, I guess. But, yeah, unfortunately for me, that 7 spot wasn't optimal. It was a kind of a difficult decision for me with that first pick. You know, you've got Davis, Embiid, Tatum all hanging around there.
Yeah.
I went with AD, but I don't know. You can make a case for all 3 of those guys, but they all have their warts too, whether you're talking about injuries or rotation issues in terms of Jason Tatum, in terms of how many different options they have in that lineup in Boston. So.
Yeah, look, I think just going back to that question quickly, where do I prefer? I probably prefer the turn as well. I find it easier to build a squad when you've got 2 almost back-to-back picks because you can basically, you can wait until you're sort of up to pick 7, 8, and then you can go, okay, I'm targeting rebounds, blocks with this pick, and then this. So I find it a little bit easier. But I do, I guess the benefit to picking in the middle is that you do get time to think about every pick. Whereas if you're picking it, like I was in the draft we did earlier today, I was picking it pick 9 in a 10-team draft. If someone takes, like Noah was picking after me, and there were a couple of occasions where he took a couple of my guys, and so and then I had no time to think about who am I going to take now? So there were a couple of dodgy picks that I made. Yeah. So you went with Anthony Davis at 7. Yeah, as you said, Embiid's there, Tatum's there. It's, for me, I think picking sort of in the middle this year is going to be tough, anywhere from sort of 5, 6 through to 10. Because, as you said, you could make a case for one of about 6 players. And they all have their pros and their cons. Obviously, Embiid per game is the clear pick there. But injuries, he's looked pretty good in the Olympics, I suppose. That's a good thing. But I still think that the Sixers are going to manage him a little bit. I think Anthony Davis, that's probably who I would have taken there. I think he was healthy last year. I mean, we always worry about injury. If you're worried about injuries, you take Tatum because he's probably, in terms of track record, he's the most durable of those guys. But no, look, I think Anthony Davis is fine. We know he can be a top 5 per game player. I would like to think that the Lakers are going to sort of hand the keys over a little bit to Anthony Davis because, well, I mean, maybe LeBron will be there forever, but surely he has to start scaling back at some point, and Anthony Davis sort of needs to take over. So I like Anthony Davis. With your next pick, you went big again. So you've gone big early, securing rebounds. Although, I mean, Sabonis, not your traditional big in that he doesn't get a lot of blocks. He gets 8.5 assists. What were you sort of thinking there with pairing Sabonis with Anthony Davis?
I just wanted to have like 2 good options in terms of my front court, and Sabonis he stayed relatively healthy as well. So if you end up losing Anthony Davis for an extended period, I've got cover there in the form of Sabonis in terms of my primary pick. So that was the reason. That was one of the reasons why I went with him. And then the guys who went after him in terms of like Brunson Booker, Leonard, I'm not completely sold on them in terms of like second round value. I think Kawhi, mm-hmm. he can do that per game wise. They all can, but in terms of Kawhi, the availability question is the one that sticks out for him. Brunson, I hope, as a Knicks fan, I hope he can duplicate what he did last season, but I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen, especially when you add Mikal Bridges to the mix and you get Julius Randle back, OG Anunoby for a full season. You know, Booker, they've added some point guards in Phoenix in terms of Tyus Jones and Monte Morris, so maybe he takes a slight hit in the assist category. I just felt that Sabonis, even with DeMar DeRozan addition, I don't think his role is going to change much, if at all, there. So I thought it was a relatively safe pick to grab him at that spot.
Yeah, I think he's fine. He obviously has his holes in his fantasy game. He doesn't get you those traditional big man defensive numbers. Yep. Doesn't really hit a lot of threes. He can sort of step out if he needs to. But, yeah, I think he led the league in rebounds was close to last year. Yeah, so, and outside of, I guess, Jokic, he's clearly the best passing big man in the league. So, out of position assists. So, obviously, taking back-to-back bigs with your third pick, you almost had to take a guard. And you did. So you went with DeJounte Murray with seventh pick of the third round. He's sort of, I don't know, he's causing a bit of chatter this offseason around what's his fit like in New Orleans and how does that impact his fantasy value and the value of those around him. You're obviously pretty, I mean, you've taken him around, this is what, 31 or something.
Yeah.
You're obviously fairly comfortable with his new role and you think that he can and still be a sort of elite fantasy producer. So what are you expecting from him this year?
I'm not expecting an explosion, but I think not being on the court with another ball dominant guard like Trae Young is in Atlanta is probably going to help Murray. I'm not expecting him to be as good as he was his last season with the Spurs from a fantasy standpoint, but I think he can be a solid top 25 player. So kind of betting on that. The other thing is, like, I don't think they're going to be able to move like Brandon Ingram just because his style of play really doesn't fit a lot of teams at this point. So that may be a bit of an issue in terms of the number of shots that go around. But I think Murray's defensive ability can help make up for that to a certain extent. So I think third round for Murray is perfectly fine in terms of his fantasy status right now.
Yeah, I'm certainly okay. I was on the Flock podcast with Lyle Swithenbank the other day, and we were talking about the Pelicans, obviously, and then about DeJounte and what his fit is. I think he'll have a good season. I think he's come out and he's sort of vocalized the fact that he wants to be viewed in that elite point guard sort of category or in that discussion. So, I think having him there helps CJ McCollum because he doesn't have to handle the ball. Yeah, what's happening with Ingram, we don't really know. It looks like he'll be there. I think he really fills a need for the Pelicans and as I said with Lyle and as he said as well, now they just need a center because at the moment Daniel Tice is probably their starting center, which is not great. Coming back around, you went with Ja Morant. So obviously didn't really play last season. He played a few games, but had the suspension and then the injury and then the Grizzlies just tanking. So what are you expecting from Moran? I mean, we know who he is. We know that he's, in terms of fantasy, his rank, I guess if you look at just pure rank, doesn't necessarily reflect his value because he has some issues with efficiency and other things. But certainly one of the more dynamic scorers in the league. I think the Grizzlies will be looking to put together a really strong season. And Moran obviously has a lot to prove after what's gone down the last 12 months. So, what are you thinking for Moran this season?
I'm just betting on him being motivated to bounce back. Not so much the injury, but the off-court stuff. I'm sure he's going to want to step up and prove that he remains the focal point of that franchise. So I think getting him back, I expect him to be a top 50 player. Like you mentioned, the efficiency can be a bit problematic at times. But I think with the group that they have, as long as they all stay healthy, I think he's going to be okay to where you can safely use a fourth-round pick on him
personally. Yeah. Yeah, and I think he's fine there. You went with Siakam with the seventh pick of the fifth round who – I mean, we don't really need to break that one down. I don't think that's fairly safe. He is who he is at this point. He's signed a long-term deal in Indiana, so we know exactly what his role is going to be, what he brings to the table every night. So a very safe pick. DeAndre Ayton with the sixth pick of the sixth round. I mean, anyone from Portland raises a couple of questions because we saw what happened last year. I guess, what are you sort of expecting from him? They drafted Donovan Clingan. They've still got Duop Reith. So is he sort of, in your eyes, is his role, his starting role, he's going to stay in Portland? Or are you thinking they may look to move him at some point or play him fewer minutes?
I think either he or Robert Williams is going to be out of there before the start of the season, personally. They draft a lottery pick in Donovan Clingan, as you mentioned. It's clear that they want to see him become the future of the franchise at that position. Ayton, he was productive when on the floor last year, but I don't know if anybody views him as like a franchise difference maker in Portland as they're looking to rebuild.
So, he does, I'm sure.
I'm glad he does. I would hope so. But, you know, I think he's going to get numbers. At that point, I kind of felt like I had to take him there. In hindsight, I wish I would have gone with Julius Randle in that spot. He went a couple picks after. But in terms of Ayton's value, I think when he's on the floor, he's going to give you good fantasy value. Mm. It's just not going to impact winning too much, if we're being honest. And eventually, I think – Williams is going to be easier to move than him for contract reasons, but I don't know if I see a long-term future in Portland for Ayton either. So that's a pick that I wasn't too excited about, but I went ahead and did it anyway. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I do think that even if he is moved, if a team is trading to get him or however it works out, it would be to start him. Like I think, as we said, he's not a sort of a franchise center or anything like that, but he is a starting NBA center. So I think, his future in Portland, a little bit cloudy, wherever he ends up, I think he'll still have a significant enough role that he can put up. And as you said, he does put up numbers when he's on the court. So again, relatively safe, not exciting at all, but it is what it is. Jrue Holiday, you took in the seventh round. I think last season we saw obviously a pretty big decline in terms of his not his role necessarily, but his production. He's still very key for the Celtics and relatively healthy. He is who he is at this point. He's sort of getting towards the back end of his career, his minutes are locked in. Defensively, he's still sort of an elite guard. When it comes to defense, doesn't necessarily translate as much to fantasy anymore. But getting someone like him in the seventh round, pick 80. Again, not a super exciting pick, but I think someone that should be able to hover around that value all season. Do you see sort of anything changing this year for him?
Not too much. I think early in the season, not having Porzingis out there could help, even though they don't play the same position, obviously. His defensive versatility may lead to the Celtics asking him to do a little bit more matchup-wise to start the season. But, I think top 75 is relatively safe value for Jrue Holiday. That's been his floor, basically, in fantasy over the last decade or so. So I'm expecting more of the same from him.
So I'm just pulling up what he was. So, and he was bang on 75th last year in 9-cat. And as you said, with Porzingis not there, he will be required to do a little bit more defensively, but offensively as well, because you're basically bringing in if it's Al Horford or if it's Luke Kornet or whoever it is to play those starting minutes at center, whoever it is, they're not as offensively talented as Kristaps Porzingis. So there's going to be a few more points there as well. Keegan Murray with your next pick. So interesting one. So his rookie season, probably disappointed slightly, but I thought he really stepped into his role last year. They got rid of Harrison Barnes. So they view him now as a key piece of their starting unit. And they're a team that wants to win and win now. DeMar DeRozan coming on board, does that sort of worry you at all in terms of Keegan's production? Does he sort of just end up being a 16-point scorer who hits three threes but doesn't do much else? Or do you think that there is he can take some more steps forward this year?
I think he can take another step forward, specifically the three-point production. You know, you add a player like DeRozan, as much as we talk about his scoring, he's a good creator for others too. And I think Keegan Murray is one of the best young catch-and-shoot players in the league. So to have those opportunities, I think we may see a slight boost in that category and in turn the points per game average as well. So he may not have the ball in his hands much as a creator, but I think he's got more upside than some people may anticipate with the DeRozan addition. So
yeah, and I mean, I think he's one of those guys, if you didn't have him on your roster last year, you probably didn't realize how good a season he had. So he was a top 60 player. And yeah, I think despite the addition of DeMar, you'd probably consider that sort of his floor, top 60, top 70, and you've got him in the eighth round here. So yeah, I think potentially it's very safe, but there's potentially three rounds of value, 3 to 4 rounds if he does continue to progress like he did last year. And we actually started to see a little bit from him on the defensive end last year. I thought he looked better. He was at one steal and 0.8 blocks, which is not it's something. Like it's not nothing. So yeah, I like that pick there. Derek Lively, you took in the ninth round, and I'm pretty sure when I spoke to Noah, he took Dan Gafford, and we sort of discussed this. Who would you prefer, Gafford or Lively? And he took Gafford, but I think he would prefer Lively. I think he sort of afterwards he regretted not taking Lively there over Gafford. Yeah, look, I think it's pretty clear that Lively is their center of the future, but Gafford is certainly not old by any means, so can still contribute. They play very similar. It's hard to play them together, which I think we saw. So I guess, who do you think starts? Do you think Gafford starts? Because he started the majority of his games in Dallas, but we did see Lively playing more minutes sort of down the stretch in the playoffs a little bit. So do you think they do make that transition over to Lively? And if so, is that as a starter, or do they just play him as the backup but give him starters minutes sort of thing?
I could see that, because that's something we saw at various points last season where Gafford would start but only play like 12, 15 minutes. It felt like kind of like a hot hand situation, but as you noted, Lively's probably going to be the center of the future for that team. You use a lottery pick to get him. Have him working closely with Tyson Chandler from day one. So I think he's going to be the one who offers a higher upside. And I think they're both in situations where they get 22 to 24 minutes per game. You're probably going to get solid fantasy value there. With the other bigs on my roster, Lively, I probably didn't need Lively, but at that point in the draft, I thought there was more positives than negatives to taking him with a ninth round pick.
And yeah, I'm just pulling up box scores and things and looking at Lively's numbers and minutes. And as you said, it was basically a minute split. And they went with whoever they felt was the better fit for the matchup. I do think they will want to start to lean into Lively a little bit more, given that they see him there long term and Gafford maybe not. So I think Lively there is, he was outside the top 100 last year, but I think slow start to the season and then Gafford came. So yeah, I think he's certainly a top 100 player this season, even in 22 to 24 minutes, which I think that would be his floor. So then you went with a rookie. So rookies didn't come off the board till pretty late, which not surprising this season, but you went with Stephon Castle. sixth pick of the 10th round. So we're looking at, what, 115 or something there. Chris Paul went prior to him.
Yeah.
Were you, like, you went with Castle. Would you have taken Chris Paul over Stephon Castle, or was Castle always sort of the guy you were targeting here?
To be honest, I wanted Castle. Not sure if I wanted him that early. That was kind of a panic move on my part. Is he someone I'm really going to look to roster in terms of late round picks, because I know I expect the Spurs to be better, especially with the addition of Chris Paul. But I kind of wonder if there would be a scenario similar to what we've seen in Utah the last couple seasons, where they kind of punch above their weight. Then at the trade deadline, Danny Ainge decides we're going to trade some of these guys to increase our draft capital. And I think the Spurs need help across the board to where that could be a possibility for Chris Paul come February, get him to a contender, get some draft capital in return. Then maybe Castle's ready to take on a more prominent role at that point. So it's a pick that I feel you kind of make with the second half of the season in mind. You're not expecting too much from early on, but I think he's got enough skill, especially defensively, to jump past guys like Malachi Branham and Blake Wesley pretty early at a minimum.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, as you said, once you get to this point in the draft, you just take those guys. Yeah. And as long as he's doing enough early in the season and putting up top 120, 130 value in 20 minutes, then you sort of just hold him, keep him on your bench, and then, yeah, maybe February, he's, whether he starts or not, but he could move into that 30-minute role later in the season. Josh Hart, another player that's probably going to cause a bit of discussion, because he was great last year. Yeah. And you're obviously a Knicks fan, and so he was amazing, but a lot of that was because of injuries. His minutes, if you look at what he was doing at the start of the season, he was sort of borderline standard league, but then closed the season putting up triple doubles and all sorts of things. So yeah. I guess, what do you, and again, you would probably have a little bit more insight being in the Knicks. Well, I won't say you're in, well, maybe you're in the inner circle. Let's say you're in the inner circle. What does his role look like opening night, assuming everyone is healthy?
He's not going to play 45 minutes per night. No. We all know that. But what he brings to the table, I can't see him dropping too far below 25 minutes. Now, what that looks like positionally, whether he's at the three or even the four, I don't know. But yeah, I think in 25 minutes, the way he rebounds the basketball, the defensive numbers he can get you, you hope he can improve the perimeter shot to where that becomes a decent part of his game. Then I think you're looking at late round value here in terms of something you can rely on throughout the season. So.
Yeah, so I'm just looking at the minutes he played. You don't see that many 40-minute games in someone's career. Yeah, look, even to start the season, his minutes were up and down a bit. He was sort of low 20s, high 20s. So, I mean, it's a little bit about fit. Do we need him on the court? Because he does a bit defensively. He's a good rebounder. But, yeah, even look at the start of the season, he was still basically sort of, well, he was close to a double-double. He gets you some assists. I think assists are sort of a bit of an underrated aspect of his game, and we saw a little bit of that towards the end of the season because he had to handle the ball a bit more. But, he had, as I said, he had multiple double-digit assist games, and even early in the season, he had a 5, 7, 7, 8, 6. So it's something people sort of think of Josh Hart as, this guard who will get you a three-pointer, 10 rebounds, maybe a steal, but they don't really talk about his assists. So, yeah, I like that pick there. Again, it's a fairly safe pick at that range, and we know what his upside is because we saw what he can do. And, yeah, we know what Thibodeau is going to do if injuries hit the Knicks. He's not going to go deep into his rotation. He's just going to play his guys more minutes. So, now you finished off with Bouzelas. So another rookie, looked good, I thought, during Summer League. One of the, I guess, feel-good stories of the draft, playing for Chicago. Yeah, I guess, what are you expecting? Chicago is sort of a team that we don't really know. I mean, they're obviously sort of approaching this as a rebuilding season, but they still have Vooch. They still have Zach LaVine. But then on the other hand, they've got Giddy. They've got Kobe White. I thought Dosunmu was really good last year. So where does Buzelis sort of fit into their rotation now? Well, now, but to start the season, and then is it a, much like with Castle, is it a situation where his role could increase as we get deeper into the season?
Yeah, that was my thinking. You know, a similar approach in terms of the second half of the year, he could end up playing more, because I don't think the Bulls are going to be that team that we've seen in recent years where they're just scratching and clawing for a play-in spot. I don't think the roster is that good top to bottom. So I think they're kind of going to be forced to play these younger guys more minutes. They still have LaVine and Vucevic, but I've been encouraged by the fact that there have been recent reports that they've tried to trade them. They just aren't very tradable, you know, players at this point. So it seems like they understand that they have to rebuild. Like, they've been trying to put it off for so long, but it really hasn't panned out. So I think you kind of have to embrace the rebuild at this point. I think they will. Buzelis, his minutes early on may be difficult, especially with the new Patrick Williams contract as well. But once you hit January, February, I think they're going to be so far back that they're going to have to play him. And that's where I think it could kind of pay off in fantasy.
Yeah, I think the same. And I mean, I hope for Bulls fans' sake that is the case, because as you said, they've been sort of pushing this mediocrity storyline for, feels like forever. So the fact that they got rid of DeRozan indicates that they are at least thinking about it. The next step is to part ways with Vooch and try and move off LaVine, but no one seems to be interested. So I actually think LaVine will be an interesting fantasy target early in the season, because he's going to want to prove a lot of stuff to a lot of people. So, and people are sort of soured on him a bit because of injuries and the storylines, the narratives around him leaving. So, yeah, I'm sort of targeting him in middle rounds of drafts if he's still available. I think he could be really good. That's your team. I guess overall, would you be, we're not playing this out or anything, but would you be happy with your team? And I suppose, what would you change? Was there any categories you feel like you may have not focused on enough?
Maybe 3-point shooting, if anything. That feels like a category where, outside of Keegan Murray, I'm not going to get too much in terms of consistent value to count on. And I think the other areas, like rebounding, is one where I think I can do some good things in terms of Davis, Sabonis, and Siakam. You know, DeJounte Murray is a solid rebounder too. So Josh Hart. So that's the one category I think I did a good job with. With 3-point shooting, I think I didn't go in planning to punt any categories, but I think that may be the category I'm just kind of like, all right, if I lose that one weekly, so be it.
Yeah, and as we know, I mean, you can get 3-point production off waivers. Yeah. So if you're in a matchup where, you might be towards the bottom of that category, but you'll be in a matchup undoubtedly during the season where you're close in threes. Maybe Josh Hart is only playing 18 minutes and not doing anything. So you drop him and pick up Malik Beasley or something who will get you. So, yeah, it is probably the category that if you wanted to punt, it's a good one to do. Let's stop sharing that. That's your team. Thanks for coming on, talking about your team. What's coming up at Roto World? The season, it's still a few months away, but it's sneaking up. I think Yahoo Leagues, I don't know if they're open. They're opening today. It's very close.
Yeah, they're pretty,
according to Dan Titus. So what's sort of on the agenda for Roto World?
Right now we're starting the process of planning out, preseason, like pre-draft plans in terms of, the draft guide, how we're going to approach that and everything. Not sure exactly when the Yahoo Fantasy Drafts will be open, but I have some mock draft content going up too, because, there isn't much else to do right now. So,
no.
Do a little bit of that, see if we can spot some early trends, and help our readers out.
Yep. Yeah. And there isn't, I mean, we've had the Olympics, which has been nice. It's given us another couple of weeks of content and stuff to talk about. And, but yeah, once this is done, we're sort of in no man's land for 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah. So, but no, look, go and follow Raf on Twitter. And yeah, check out all the work that they're doing. You've got your show with Dan and Vaughn, which I think you're just doing every couple of weeks at the moment.
Yeah.
Is that right?
We're on hiatus because, you know, obviously as part of NBC, the Olympics take priority right now.
So. Oh, yeah, of course. Yep.
Then you've got various types of American football too coming up. So yeah, we're taking a short hiatus, and then I think we should be back in September with the podcast, but we'll have you know, printed stuff up too.
Yeah. And that's scarily, that's not that far away. September is only 3 to 4 weeks away. So yeah, not that long. So no, look, thanks again for jumping on the show. Thanks to everyone for tuning in, watching, listening, whatever you're doing. Remember to like and subscribe. Give this video a thumbs up if you're watching on YouTube. We're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere else that you consume your content. That will do for today's show. I will be back tomorrow doing a live show with Alex Berutha. We were going to break down this draft, but we actually, as I've alluded to, we did a draft earlier today. So we're actually going to talk through our teams in that draft. So that should be a good show as well. Until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.